Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
The stars. We have all the stars.
They're not really simple things. They're just pretty amazing.
I reckon it's the most enticing culture that you could ever learn.
Having a yarn. Good to have a yarn. And I like talking, so.
This is Outback Out Loud, Brewarrina.
Check out these stories from the Brewarrina community members.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Here's some stories from the kids at Wilmeringle School.
Me, my mum and Sky, we went down to the weir and we were doing a Yabby Carnival. When we went down to the Yabby Carnival, my lion started pulling and I was still eating chips in my hand and said it was hard for me to catch the Yabby, but when I did, I won it and I got chips in the end of the way. I was going to keep it by throwing back in the water.
When me and Pop and Emily and Cadence and my cousins went down to the weir, we was going to catch some fish and we had marshmallows and then we cooked it on the fire.
Me and my two uncles were on the motorbikes and we was riding around wheel and then we went out to the weir and jumped in and then we was looking for some fishes but we didn't have none so we went home.
I was at home in bed watching telly till Emily came along and said we are going to the weir. I jumped up and we jumped on the truck. We went all to the weir.
And then when we was walking across the river, I thought I ran to the river. And until Cadence jumped in too and we started swimming around. And then my other cousin, he went over to catch a little fishes and he caught some fishes and we hauled them and then we chucked them back in the river.
Me and my pop went out at the paddock look for emu eggs. Then we found our emu and on the nest. We got a stick and chased away. Then we went over there, got a couple eggs, left two there.
But when I tread in the mud, it felt yucky.
All the mud was touching our feet and it was very muddy and squishy.
I'm a yellow belly.
The fish felt all slippery and all that.
We just put on salt, pepper and lemon and we put on some tomato in that and then we just cover it around with foil and we put it in the fire.
Then Nathan caught the fish, so we went along and cooked the fish. And then when we cooked the fish, we went home because it was almost night time. Then I went to bed.
My name is Belinda Boney. I've got a nickname, it's Wabu, something that my dad gave me as a child. Don't know what it means, but I've got asked a relative, one of the relatives, and they said it means special lady. I don't even know what Wabu, but a lot of people call me Wabs or Linda. I think Belinda's a bit flash for me. Anyways, my family's originally from Gadooga. My dad ran away with me when I was 8 or 9 to Bree, to Barn 4, where I am living now. Well, I grew up pretty much. We grew up in a tin shack, dirt floor. We didn't have a pretty thing, but my dad worked really hard, shearer. Growing up in Brewarrina, love it, love the river. We were talking, my brother Hudson, my eldest brother, we were talking about going fishing with his cancer, and now that he's more stronger than what he is, and he doesn't use a walkie when we go for a walk now, which is good. And we're talking about how we went down to look for mussels down the strait. I said, we're going to go down and look for mussels. And then we were laughing and giggling at how who's going to get in and look for mussels? And I said, yeah, no. Well, I said, I'll definitely sink now. I said, we was only kids, but fishing, yeah, love it. And we just love watching the kids catch them by hand still today, which is, I reckon, is pretty amazing for this generation from what our ancestors used to do down here. Yeah, so, and they said, someone said, oh, we're catching fish with our tree garden. So if you have a tree garden, is just a net around a tree garden, yeah. So they put that in, and how they know there's a fish in there, when it hits, so they put their hand in, and they'll have a rope tied, so they break the fish neck and, yeah, just continue on the labour thing, or they just feel around the rocks. Yeah, it's pretty amazing though when you watch it. And I've seen about 10 to 15 kids catching emu, really, it was amazing, down there, down where? Down the fish traps. And it was funny, see, because they was all running through the gullies and we were just laughing. I was just sitting there, me and Sister Mandy passed away, and we were sitting there and we were just amazed watching them about all these kids just chasing these emus. There was no feed on the road, so there was this flock of emus, so they caught one. And my son ran across the wall and he said, Mum, you want some meat? They made this fire, and all these kids, they sat down how to feed an emu. It was amazing. I think that was one of the highlights. But when the river rises, the family comes out, the community comes out. It's amazing, yeah. I think our fish traps is our thing in Brewarrina, yeah.
I started rodeo a little bit late. I was probably 24. I think I did do it when I was little. I got on a few steers and potty calves and things like that, and going to rodeos and things. But I really started rodeoing when I was 24. So I started riding buck and bulls, which was pretty fun. I didn't ride a whole heap of them. I got thrown a lot and chased and jumped on and things like that. But then I started riding horses, which were bucking horses called saddlebunks. I started riding them and I really wanted to learn how to ride them. So then I give up bull riding for a little while, and then I started getting good at saddlebronc riding and winning more money. It was just too hard to go between bull riding and saddlebronc because I had to change all my different spurs and stuff like that. So, and chaps, and chaps are things with, yeah, used to hang on with your saddle and stuff like that. I got pretty good at saddle bronc riding. I got to go to a lot of places. I got to go to right up the top of Queensland from, I think, Mareeba was probably the highest I went up. It's up near Cairns, and then right down to, say, Melbourne. I've been right down the whole length of Australia pretty well. And then I got to go to the Sydney Royal Easter show and ride in front of a big crowd there. It was about 40 or 50,000 people. And then I decided I wanted to go take it even further. So I went and I travelled across Canada probably 3 or 4 times just chasing rodeos. I was doing about 7 rodeos a weekend. I had a lot of fun. I spent 6 months over there. I spent a lot of time with a lot of mates. I didn't know I had that many mates over there, but there ended up being about 30 of us. We're all bull riders and bareback riders and bronc riders and bulldoggers and things like that. And I ended up staying with a lady over there, running to her at a rodeo, and I had nowhere to stay. So she asked me, did I want to stay there and just do a bit of work for her, and she'd look after me. And she ended up telling me that she knew 2 guys from Brewarrina that ended up staying in Canada with her. So that was a bit random. I went to the Canadian Cowboys Association finals, and I didn't do too bad there. I won some money, and then I went to another one called the Manitoba finals, and then I didn't do too bad there. I think I placed 4th or something overall. So you have to go through the whole year, the whole season, to make points up and money up to get to the finals rodeo. In the meantime, before I left to go to Canada, I was rodeoing here, so we have a different competition. So I made it to the finals here as well. So I was 6 months in Canada and 6 months here, and I made 4 lots of finals for the year. and come out with some money and rode some good bucking horses and had a lot of fun.
How big are the horses?
Oh, I've been on some really big horses. I got scared sometimes. I don't know, it's probably, I think the biggest horse I was on was, he was probably 18 hands, and yeah, he was, so that's probably, I couldn't even say, it's taller than me, so I'm pretty tall, I'm 6 foot. It was sometimes.
Get stomped on, that would be scary.
Yeah, I got stomped on a few times. Yeah.
Have you had any injuries?
I have. I've had a lot of injuries. I broke all my toes. That was freaky. Don't ask me how I did that. It just, horse rolled on me and it broke all my toes. I've broken my wrist. I've broken four ribs and punctured a lung. I've hurt lots of stuff, pulled lots of muscles, and the last one I had a horse come out and crashed on me. that hurt for a little while, but.
Hang tight or stay loose.
Bit of both. Yeah, bit of both. Yeah. hang on with your knees and lay back and let everything else fly, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah, mate.
How big are the horns on the bull?
Oh, it depends. Sometimes they've got horns and sometimes they don't, but I don't think it matters. They still chase you sometimes.
How do you actually train to do your job? Like,
I have a few bucking machines that I've made myself. I've got one that tows along behind a four-wheeler, and it bucks as it goes along. The wheels turn and it makes it buck. So that's pretty fun to get started. But I also have a spur board, which is, it's more like a sawhorse with sides on it, and you just sort of practice your style and. But mainly just getting on horses. The more horses you get on, the better you get at it. It's kind of like, it's not really like riding a bike, but you've got to keep going to get better. And, yeah.
I've got a friend who's a rider, and he's quite, not very tall, and quite stumpy, and you're very tall and very thin. I just wondered, is there a better body shape to help you stay on better, or is it just about skill?
Well, apparently they got it easier than little fellas, but... yeah.
Is that because of their centre of gravity?
Yeah, I don't know. I've got a couple of mates and I think they make it look a lot flasher than me, but I think it's just because their little legs go so fast, they make it look good. But, I've got to have a really good bucking horse to make it look good, and I've got to be on the ball and, making it look as flash as I can. But, yeah, that's what I get with the little fellas. But, yeah, it's... all about the size of your heart, I think. Just, yeah, if you want to have a go, give it to them.
Luke Demery, the Southbury Butchery. I've been here a year now. I've come over from Bourke, the previous butcher moved jobs, so yeah, I'll come over here to help out for 3 months and I end up staying. It's been a year now, so. Yeah, it's got a nice little town. I like it. I was surprised. And, yeah, just the town itself, good little community. That's, just a friendly little place. And everyone you meet in town are always, happy and having a yarn. Good to have a yarn. And I like talking, so. Absolutely love the river. So, yeah, and brought a kayak over here and do a bit of fishing. But other than that, yeah, I like hunting. I love my hunting. And I'm a professional roo shooter as well. It's $1.30 a kilo at the moment per kangaroo. Not per kangaroo, but obviously you go by the weight. But, anywhere, you may have a night, 500 to 2,500 for a night. So maybe about $30 a kangaroo, close around there. So, yeah, it's really good money. 95% of it's exported to Chile, China and America. And it's not really in demand here. A lot of people don't really ask for it in Australia anyway. It's more of a niche sort of market that people are starting to get into now and realising the health benefits of kangaroo meat. Nights start usually on dark, and go out and you obviously try and find the kangaroos with the spotlight and then put them down. Everything's got to be headshot, so everything humanely done, and then they're eviscerated, so all the organs are taken out besides the liver, heart and kidneys and lungs. So obviously they get inspected by Australian Quarantine Inspection Service. And that, and also feral pigs, they take feral pigs as well, and they're all exported to make boarwurst and other German sausages. So yeah, it's interesting. 6 years ago, I was living in Western Australia, in Perth. I didn't think I'd be in Bree Warren or working at a butcher shop, I can tell you, or kangaroo shooting. But yeah, it's definitely a good life choice, I'd reckon. You drive around Perth, or the suburb I was living in there, it's still a fairly small sort of a suburb, but just, you know, when you're driving along and you get the wave, you'd have to get 500 k's out of Perth to get that. Here, you drive down the street and people are waving to you, and you let you know everyone, and, you know, if someone's in trouble, everyone helps out, something, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, you don't get that in the bigger sort of towns. I think a lot of people are doing that now too, aren't they? A lot of people are starting to get away from the cities and starting to come out to these sort of communities, which is good for the place, especially if they start getting people like nurses and builders and tradespeople out to these places. But once they stay here, they find it hard to leave.
Hi, I'm Eureen Warrawina.
I was born here in Bree Warrina in 1985, and I am from here. My family's from here, so I should have a lot of knowledge about my history and my culture, but unfortunately, because of, you know, four generations of my family living on the old mission, it is lost to us. Also, being the last descendants of the Burrumbinya tribe, that tribe is completely gone, so there's no language. So there are things I can't ever get back. It's a part of you, you can't get rid of it. You can't actually teach it or learn it, but you know it's missing. And I need to get it back because, you know, I've got kids myself. Like being connected to Bree Warrina, I always come home. I won't leave here now. But I'm always at peace in here. And to get any sort of culture back is amazing. It's changed my life. I do art now. I get to talk about my culture every day. And bringing that back into my life has changed my life completely. It just makes you stronger. And a whole person is. Without it, we're missing something. And you can feel it. We are still lucky because we live on country and we have it and we can obtain it. But when it comes to personal stories like mine with my family, where I've lost everybody, the older generation are all gone, I can't get it back. And there are certain things I will never get back. So I just have to work with what I've got and work with the people that can tell me stuff like Brad Steadman and Brad Hardy. Being Aboriginal is probably the greatest thing that I could ever be. Like, it's just amazing. I love being Aboriginal. I love our culture. Everything about it is just beautiful.
Friends Lily and Trish remember the 2015 March for Domestic Violence in Bree Warrina and reflect on their own relationship experiences.
Girls, you are not responsible for your partner's problems and emotional and physical and intellectual or spiritual baggage. You are only responsible for your physical, emotional, intellectual and spiritual selves.
I was always a victim when I was going through domestic violence, and I overcame that and I became a survivor, and I'm still a survivor on that area.
You're stronger than me. I jumped out of the frying pan into the fire, then into the furnace before I sort of went, oh, there's a pattern happening here.
Yes.
What am I doing? And then I met this wonderful woman, Annie Melva Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
who was doing the child sexual assault workshops.
Yeah.
And I think I was in my mid to late 20s. She just switched all the lights on for me. I remember marching here a few years ago when we lost another sister here. Yeah.
It was pouring down rain and there was still a group of us women that all got together and we marched and we had the police escort us because I was the one who actually organised it, and I rang the council up to get permission to do this march. And the council just flat out said no, they were not going to give us permission. And I just thought, up yours. I rang the police and the police said, you don't need permission to do that march. They said, you do the march, we'll escort you. And so we had the police escorting us with the lights flashing from in front of where the young girl was murdered down the main street, to the pub, back around, and then to the hall. And, you know, the police were really, really fantastic. They were really there to support us. And it's like, it just goes to show the difference of opinions. Mm. So, yeah, but it was great.
Oh, it was really awesome. Yeah. And like you said, it was raining cats and dogs.
It really was, yeah.
Yeah, we got a big turnout.
We had a really great turnout.
How healing was it? Doing those workshops, making all those signs and banners,
yes,
leading up to the march. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And then when we went to the hall, we had all these men stand up and say, you know, talk about domestic violence and how it's not acceptable. It was like, it was just so fantastic. It really was. So, yeah, we've done a great thing for the community of healing, because the community was really in a state of shock.
For family and domestic violence support and someone to call or talk to, 1-800-RESPECT, that is 1-800-737-732, or Lifeline 13114, or the Kids Helpline 1-800-551-800.
Thanks for listening to Outback Out Loud.
We'll see you in Brewarrina.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. Over 100 recordings were made. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.